Hello and welcome to Sox Talk on the Air, the official podcast of SoxTalk.com. I'm Mario Sweet from Chicago, and once again, up west is Jason Gage.
Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. Whatever time you're listening to our podcast, welcome back. It's our second show. We're going to start off, we're going to be previewing. Last week we previewed the positions, or the pitching staff. This week we're going to take a look at the positional players. But before we do that, we're going to talk a little bit about Dustin Hermanson. Yesterday, Ozzie Guillen was really quoted, and he appeared to be very concerned about Hermanson's back. It's been stiff. He's been completely ineffective this spring. And without Hermanson, this bullpen's going to suffer. And it's already a weakness, I think, on this team. But the White Sox are supposedly interested in picking up an arm, although Guillen said that he wants to give his in-house candidates more of a chance.
Well, I think that, you know, the cause for concern with Hermanson's back, they're starting to ring true now. And you wonder, is there really any outside options for them? Especially, you know, we're going to touch on this a little bit, but with the Cintron trade, they traded Jeff Bejanero, who could have been possibly, maybe not on par with the Hermanson, but possibly on par, you know, if his ability comes through during the season.
Yeah, we have no depth. I think I stated upon it last week, but if we're expecting some guys in our lower or our upper minor leagues to come in and pitch, we don't have anyone there. I think Sean Tracy's the only one with a capable arm, but he still has to improve his command, and this would be his first time out of the bullpen. So if we need bullpen help, it's going to be from the outside, because the candidates we have in for our left-hander spot are bad enough. And then the right-handed spot, to have to go into the our minor league system again there, which is non-existent anymore, would just be a mistake. We'd have two guys that are getting lit up every night.
Going to the Cintron trade. Traded for Jeff Bejanero. I personally like the trade. I know you've had some good thoughts on it, too. As far as Bejanero in the organization, he really wasn't going to get a chance, especially being 28 years old, being a minor leaguer his whole career.
Oh. Yeah, Bejanero, this deal was a win-win. It's a win for Jeff Bejanero. He did some great things for my site. We've talked to him before. And Bejanero is a guy who has put up unbelievable numbers in the minors the past three seasons. I mean, last year in Charlotte, 1.41 ERA. The problem is it hasn't worked out at the major league level. Now, part of that reason is he only has, I think, like, he's pitched in 13 major league games with a 9.24 ERA. And that's over two different seasons. So he's never had that time to fit in. With Arizona, he will fit in. Arizona had a terrible bullpen last year. I think we have a couple of their guys actually we signed as left-hander candidates. And he's going to get his time in there. But we're getting a guy in Cintron. I happen to be watching the New York Mets-Puerto Rico exhibition game about 10 days ago on ESPN before any trade was made. And Cintron caught my eye. And I think Sox fans are going to really like this kid. He's about 27. He's 26. And Cintron, real pretty swing, switch hitter. He's been playing really good in the World Baseball Classic with Puerto Rico. So if you have a chance to see him, I think Puerto Rico's still in it. You can watch him play. But this is going to be a good pickup. But he becomes our best bat off the bench, not Mikowiak in my mind.
I think the concern with Cintron is his defense, you know, as far as playing shortstop goes. But I think considering that the Sox have such a good infield defense with Deguchi and Creedy and Uribe, I think him being an offensive player off the bench, I think that's a good complement to them.
Oh, yeah, I'd agree. I mean, he led the National League last year in pinch hit home runs. He's been a good clutch hitter off the bench with the Diamondbacks. I mean, his career average in the major leagues is .279. So this guy is a quality hitter. He's had success. And honestly, it makes no sense to me why the White Sox were able to get him with only giving up Bejanero. I realize he makes $1.6 million. But this is a good move. And I think the X factor in this is if Iguchi does have a sophomore slump, and he's been working on his swing mechanics this year, and he said he was going to go back to his old swing, then I think Cintron can come in and be the second baseman and put up quality numbers, if Iguchi struggles.
Well, like you said before, the Diamondbacks did have some bullpen problems, so that's probably why they got a Bejanero, and I don't think they necessarily thought Cintron was a had starter capability. So to them, he was nothing more than a bench player. As far as being a starter in the Sox, I would hope not. I do have some doubts with Iguchi, which I'm going to bring up later on, but I don't know if I could see him possibly, you know, being a starter and starting at second base.
Well, the nice thing is we got those options at least. And then the other option is, let's say Brian Anderson struggles in center, then you have Mikowiak, who's primarily was brought in to be, you know, obviously he's going to play some outfield, but he was brought in as a backup plan for Joe Creedy in his back. Yeah. So if Anderson struggles, You have Mikowiak, who can slot out in the center field, yet you still have Cintron, who can play second, short, and third base and kind of fill in still. So it gives us pretty much quite a few utility guys that can play a lot of positions, but we'll talk about that right at the end of our show.
Let's run down the lineup. The lineup isn't really set. Guillen has kind of jumped back and forth like he usually does. Nothing really set in stone, but what's set at the top of the order, Scott Bessendick's going to be leading off. He'll be in left field, obviously. Second is Juan Uribe, playing shortstop. Third, there's been some debate as far as, you know, it should be Tome or Canerico or Dye. Tome, it looks like he's going to be batting third, followed by, what, Canerico, Dye?
A.J. Pierzynski would be hitting six, or Tadahito Iguchi. I think the Sox would like Pierzynski to be in the sixth hole because it kind of brings in the left-handed bat to break up the right-handers.
And then they would finish off with Anderson Creedy or Creedy Anderson. But chances are it'll probably be Creedy Anderson. They'll probably have Anderson finishing out the order because he's got a little speed and he's probably the weakest hitter going into the season.
Yeah, but with Ozzie, you never know. He may get some wacky idea in his mind.
Yeah, but the big acquisition from William's standpoint was Jim Tome. Now, I have three really big questions for him. Number one is the obvious one, is if he's going to be healthy and he's going to be healthy for the entire season. The second question is, will he be healthy enough to be productive? I think a lot of times you have guys who are out there playing 140, 150 games, and just because they're out there doesn't necessarily mean that they're healthy enough to produce like the numbers that they had. The big question, though, probably more important than the other two, is can he DH? Can Jim Tomey be a full-time DH for the entire season?
I think that's an interesting point. I remember Frank Thomas, especially early on when he went to DH, really hated it. I mean, he always said it affected his swing. And in Tomei's case, he's never really been in a full-time DH. But Tomei's a good hitter, and I think he'll be able to hit and just not be able to play in the field. The big question to me is not whether he can DH. It is definitely his health. I realize he's in great shape this spring. I mean, judging by the pictures I've seen and all the comments, it looks to basically be a fact. However, being in great shape now and being able to
sustain it over
162 game season plus playoffs, hopefully, is another story. Which means Ozzie is going to have to do what he did last year and do his very best to keep this entire team fresh with his Sunday lineups. And in Tomei's case, I could see him, especially early in the season, getting 2 days off a week. With guys like Mikowiak and Cintron on your bench, you can kind of afford to do that because, I mean, we have solid bats that can come in and semi-produce.
I would agree with that. I would definitely agree with that. My whole thing with the DH, though, is not that he's batting awful in his career, but I believe his career average as a DH is maybe like 20 points less or so from, you know, when he's playing the field. And like you said with Thomas and so many guys in the American League, you don't see many good DHs out there. You obviously have the David Ortiz, and Edgar Martinez was great for so many years. But a lot of guys, they have trouble playing that DH spot because they can't make up. If they go 0-for-4, they can't make a great play in the field to contribute to a team in another way. It's what they do offensively is all they have to show for the day.
Yeah, and that means when you have that 0-for-4 day, you're pressing more and more at the plate because that's the only way you're going to be able to make up for your play. And the nice thing, Tomei doesn't seem like that guy. And I think on the White Sox team, you don't have any stars. We're not going to look at him to lead us to the World Series. This is a team. I mean, obviously, he's going to have to play well if we're going to make it to the World Series. But he's not just the key guy. We have our pitching staff. This is a well-built team.
Good point. I mean, because when you go back, when you were talking about Thomas, Thomas was a huge part of the offense when he was DHing. Him being on was a key to the Sox, you know, being a successful team. So I do agree with you on that. Going to move Guillen's making, and we hinted about, you know, we talked about this in the beginning, Juan Uribe batting second. Obviously, it seems like a questionable move because he's a very aggressive hitter. But towards the end of the season, he showed some signs of him being a number two hitter, didn't he? With his patience.
Oh, man, this is just a great move. Uribe has got to be one of my favorite players on the Sox and in baseball. And he's got the power. I've always been calling him Little Miguel Tejada. I think he has all the tools. I know, laugh now. But he was working with...
I wasn't laughing in doubt.
You were laughing with me, not against me. Or at me. Anyway, he worked with Walt Riniak, who was Frank Thomas's like personal batting coach for a while, and also he obviously was a batting coach for the White Sox way back when. And he got a little step, and it made him a little bit more patient at the plate. But the best part about Uribe hitting second, He is the best guy, better than Iguchi on this team when it comes to hitting the sacrifice fly and doing situational
I believe
hitting.
he was one of
When
the
you
league leaders, wasn't he last year in the American League? He was one of the league leaders.
And I think the reason why is Uribe will lose his focus at the plate. But when you ask him to do something, it regains his focus and he goes up there with, you know, that mentality and he gets the job done. And the other nice thing with him in the two hole, with Pasednik on first, he's going to see a lot of fastballs, and I think he'll hit 20 home runs in that two hole.
And because he has a tendency to get it hot too, he could carry. You know, when you have a guy in a two hole who has his power and has his ability to drive and runs too, it's pretty nice. So if he can learn how to make some contact at times, and then at the same time when he gets hot, which is going to happen, there's going to be times this year where he's probably one of the hottest hitters on that Sox team. That could be a huge. It could be a real nice duo at the top of the order with Tim and Pasednik.
Plus, you'll see less strikeouts. Now, let me see right here before I say that. I don't think Uribe struck out as much as Iguchi. Iguchi tends to have a slow swing from time to time, and he'll get in strikeout funks. But Uribe, even though he swings at everything, only struck out 77 times compared to the 114. So that'll be nice, having a few less strikeouts in the two spot.
Yeah, and I like Uribe. I've liked him since the day I've seen him. He's got that unorthodox approach to him. And I think last year he was given a spot. He had the spot for the entire year. He's going into this year knowing that it's his position. And he's probably going to have to do a lot wrong to lose that position. So I think it's him. I think he's going to be relaxed. And even though if he came into spring training a little overweight, I think he'll be fine there this season. I think he's going to have his best year yet. Now, he's replacing Iguchi from the two-hole. You said he struck out a lot. I think he had like 114 strikeouts last season in like 135 games. They want to move him to the bottom of the order because both him and the organization, they want him to show more power. They want him to show his ability to hit more homers, you know, 25, 30 homers, whatever he feels he's capable of doing. Personally, I don't see that happening. I think if he tries to go down to the bottom of the lineup or the middle of the lineup and tries to be a power hitter, he's going to struggle big time.
I actually like the move. I think he gave himself up a little too much, and Iguchi's a professional hitter. I give him credit for doing that. This guy was a middle-of-the-order hitter in Japan. He knows how to handle the situation, and he has 20 home run power. He had 15 of them last year, 278, 342 on-base percentage. I mean, Iguchi had a really solid year, aside from the strikeouts.
That's what concerns me, though. If you remember at the end of the year in September and even the playoffs sometimes, he got a little pull-happy. And if he starts trying to pull the ball, you already have 114 strikeouts in 135 games. If he starts pulling them more, trying to hit a little, you know, a few more home runs, yeah, he might get 20, 25 home runs, but you might see him strike out 130, 140 times.
His strikeout numbers may climb, but on the flip side of that, you have he's not going to be sitting there taking quite as many pitches, trying to, you know, make sure, because he had to make sure that Pasenda got a few opportunities to steal second base, which oftentimes put him in a hole. And I disagree with you on him being pull happy. He did get pull happy in the playoffs. I actually think he was tired. I mean, I'm pretty sure the Japanese season's shorter, substantially shorter, than the Major League season. So he wasn't used to the daily grind.
That could be a possibility. That could definitely be a possibility, although he had more days off than anybody on the team. I do have some doubts about him. I think he might get figured out. You know, he's one guy, and I don't know if you noticed this last year, but he is one guy who it's very easy to get him out with a hanging curveball. I've never seen somebody miss a hanging slider and a hanging curveball, especially inside, as much as him.
Yeah, that was his. When he had a good hitter's count and he got a good pitch to hit, he popped up. He just didn't do it. And I think part of it is he's such a good hitter, he expects good pitches, and he just beats himself up and he swings over it. But the curveball in general was the pitch that tended to get him. More importantly, though, oftentimes if a guy had a good fastball, Iguchi had no chance. He has a slower bat. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it works when he ages down the road. But this year, I think you'll see similar numbers to last year, a little bit more power. But he's going to have to go back to last year's swing because he's hitting like 95 or something in spring training so far with this old or this is new mechanics that are.
And not to be the one who, you know, who panics with spring training. I think spring training is, you know, a lot of times when people say, oh, you know, they're 2-5 or whatever the record is, and people start panicking, not to, you know, to panic over this, but the fact that he's batting 95 and the strikeouts that he had last year, I feel that he's going to struggle big time this year. I hope I'm wrong. Obviously, I hope I'm wrong, but I just have a feeling he's going to have some struggles this year.
Definite possibility, but like I said, I like Cintron. I think Cintron's as good of a hitter as Oguchi. And I think he's got about similar power. So I'm not too concerned there. If Oguchi struggles, Cintron comes in, no problems
Now,
in my mind.
one guy who carried a big offensive load last year with his power was Jermaine Dye.
Yep, good old Dead, as everyone was calling him at the start
What
of
was it,
2005.
April through what, mid-May or maybe the end of May? Probably the
Yeah, he
first 2 months.
was. The only hit he had was the game winner against Cleveland, pretty much, to start the season. But Dye, Mr. Consistency, the only thing you have to worry about Dye, last year was his first healthy season in forever.
Yeah.
So will he repeat it? Is he over his shattered leg episode from the playoffs? I mean, I don't think you're ever over it.
Yeah, you're never over it. But I think the one thing is that he played pretty hard last year. You know, I think he probably swiped a few bases. He was running the bases aggressively. He was in the field aggressively. You didn't see him, what's the word? You know, you didn't see him at all hesitant in the field. So I think that is a good sign where maybe he's finally over all the injuries and he's going to be healthy. But if he
Yeah,
gets hurt again, there could be some
we have
problems.
nothing in the outfield. I mean, obviously we have Mikowiak that can play outfield, but if we lose Jermaine Dye, our only power threat in that outfield, we're going to lose a lot of production. And once again, this is a situation where Kenny will have to go outside of the organization, notice a trend here, and pick someone up. The problem is, and I like the trades Ken Williams has made. We do not have any chips in this organization. They're going to get us a good hitter to put us over the top. This team, aside from maybe a reliever or two being added via trade, is going to have to be the team that wins the World Series because I don't see the financial wiggle room to make a blockbuster trade, and we sure don't have the prospects to bring ourselves another star if it's necessary.
Well, I think the financial aspect of it won't necessarily be a problem because I think if they're close to actually going to the playoffs again and possibly repeating, you've seen that they already jumped their payroll about $20 million, so I could see them doing it again. But like, no, you are right with the prospects. I'm not really, you know, a genius when it comes to the Sox minor leagues. You're more, you know, into that stuff than I am. But they don't appear to have much left, so they don't have the pieces to necessarily make the trade. Hopefully they find a dumb organization that they don't have to dump much to.
Yeah, we're the pirates when you need them.
All right, well, let's take a break. We're going to come back and get into the rest of the lineup. Of course, Paul Konerko and Pitsenik and the bottom of the order, and then, of course, the bench.
Let's not forget the rally, Creedy.
Uh-oh. We'll be right back.
Psst, hey, you want to hear the most irreverent sports talk on the web and make some money while doing it? And all you got to do is join Derek Simon all week long as he breaks down the world of sports through a bettor's eyes on the web's hottest handicapping program, the Simon Says Audio Show.
49% of those polled gave the referee an F for Super Bowl 40. And don't get me wrong, I don't want the cards and hate mail saying that I think the Super Bowl was fixed. But again, that's a realistic concern. It needs to be addressed. It needs to be taken seriously. And that's all I'm advocating, is that the NFL set these guys down, force them to watch this game and explain why they made some of the calls they did, and try to make sure that it never happens again. When there are mistakes that are made, own up to them. You know, I love these politicians who will apologize for things where there are no consequences. I've said before, I apologize then for the Vietnam War. As long as there are no consequences to me, I apologize for World War II, World War I, pretty much any bad thing that has ever happened, the Holocaust, I apologize for all of that, because there are no consequences, so why not? The NFL can be a model for professional sports and make sure that we get good officiating crews, that we feel confident that we're going to watch a game and not a show.
It's your best bet for the best bets. The Simon Says Audio Show, only on the Premier Sports Podcast Network, 360thepitch.com.
I leave you.
Well, welcome back. That promo you heard was of Derek Simon, Simon Down the Stretch. It's a handicapping show.
Simon
I have no
Down the
idea.
Stretch? What the hell is
Hey.
that?
Hey, I make up new shows every day.
Horrible plugging. Horrible.
That's why I make no money doing this.
The proper name was Simon Says Audio. It's a Simon Says Audio show on 360 The Pitch.
The only thing I
No
know
more
about
plugging for you.
The only thing I know about horse racing is and away
It's
they
not
go.
horse racing, it's handicapping.
Oh, I thought it was handicapping horse races.
No. It's just handicapping in general, sports handicapping, betting.
But let's get back to the White Sox here.
Jesus, Jason.
The big news of the offseason, prior to getting Jim Thome.
Prior to getting Rob Mikhoviak.
Yeah, prior to getting everyone, you know.
With Paul Konerko.
Before free agency began. It was Paul Konerko, as my echo just said. He had an incredible postseason. At the parade, everyone's going, oh, where's the final out ball? Is it going to be a whole Doug Minkiewicz?
I didn't even know he had it, though. Maybe I was the only one. I didn't know he had it.
I don't think you were the only one.
Okay.
I was shocked. And then there he is, standing up at the podium, and he gives Jerry Reinsdorf the ball. Now, that looks like a free gesture, but in reality, it got himself $60 million to stay in the city of Chicago.
You know what? He was on the radio not too long after signing it, and he made it clear. He's like, there wasn't a negotiating ploy by any means. You know, he really meant to do it. Who knows? He may have just been saying that on the radio. We don't know.
But the important part is, Konerko turned down less money from Baltimore and pretty much the same deal from the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim to stay in Chicago and go for the repeat.
But that doesn't change the fact that he was given a lot of money, does it?
This is what I'm going to say. 5 years, $60 million. $12 million is a lot of money. But this guy's consistently hitting 40 home runs a year for the White Sox, and he stepped up. He did what Frank Thomas, the best White Sox player ever, has never done before, and that's stepping up in the postseason.
Is consistent 2 years?
Consistent? What is it? 30 home runs in 5 of the last 6 years for the White Sox? 100 RBIs?
Here's my thing.
He had one bad season.
I could tolerate the contract, cause, like you said, what he did in the playoffs. How many Grand Slams did he hit? Like two? Didn't he have a couple Grand Slams?
He had one Grand Slam. I don't think he had two. But I remember I was lucky enough to be at the pennant games, Angels, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Yeah, it takes way too long to say. Versus the White Sox. And every game, first inning, Konerko, boom, 2-run homer, boom, 3-run homer. And they're the White Sox go. They're up 3-0 already on the Angels, or 2-0 on the Angels. And then our pitching staff just shuts them down.
And that's the reason why I could tolerate the deal. But when I look at the deal, 5 years, $60 million, all I do is I look back into what? Was it 2003, was it? Or maybe 2002 when he got that when he got the three-year deal for $21 million. At the time, a lot of people, including myself, liked the deal. What happened a year in? What happened 3 months into the deal? Everybody was questioning it. Everybody was saying, maybe we should trade him. Actually, going into last season, remember when Carlos Lee was traded for Pretsenik, there were some people who were actually saying maybe Konerko should be traded. That's kind of where I have some doubts in. He got a big contract before, and he struggled big time with it. Could it happen again?
It could happen. But let's remember here. One season, a .234 average. Let me just run this down for you. Since joining the White Sox in 99, .294, .298, .282, .304, then that .234, .277, .283. And home run-wise, 24, 21, 32, 27, 18, 41, 40. 41, 40.
Okay, just because you're bringing up good points doesn't mean you're right.
Hey, nothing ever means I'm possibly right. But he only strikes out 100, right around 100 times, and basically the last 2 years where he added his power.
But he's slow.
That just makes him funny to watch. We can put bets on whether he'll ever get another inside the ballpark home run like he did against the Devil Rays back like when he was young.
You know what? That was classic. And I would probably give him a couple million dollars just for giving me that, because that was exciting to watch.
And how else are we going to have charity races between A.J. Pierzynski, Paul Konerko, and the famous Benji Molina? Come on, we need to have these type of events.
I don't know. You know what?
Konerko, 5 year, $60 million. A bargain, considering what other free agents are getting. Considering that this guy is now the face of the organization, right along with Ozzie Guillen. This was a good move.
Great PR move.
It was a big time, yeah.
Great PR move.
And let's just
But even if he puts up the numbers for the next couple years and kind of makes his money, which is, what, $12 million a year, the fifth year in his contract, the fourth, fifth year in his contract, he's going to be what?
34. I mean, look, Barry Bonds may have had magical creams. Barry Bonds hit 70 home runs when he's, what, 38 years old? How do we know Konerko's not going to hit 70 home runs when he's 38?
So you're saying that Konerko's going to be on steroids at around 35?
That's what you said. I never accused Barry Bonds of ever being on steroids. I said he had magical creams.
Oh, cream. What type of cream was this? Lotion?
Hey, Barry Bonds just put it on. He had no idea he was taking. The trainer just gave it to him. You know, you just shrug your shoulders and walk away.
You cover your ears and you cover your eyes and you walk away.
Before I get sued, let's go on to our next topic.
The top of the order. Scotty Poe. Scott Pitsenik. He had a hell of a season last year, even though he got hurt for the last, 2 months he was injured. But the big news, and it's pretty sad that I didn't know about this, he's got a shoulder injury.
Yeah.
When the hell did this happen?
I have no idea. I actually found out he was hurt yesterday. Actually, probably this morning. But
we should stop doing the show right now if you don't know this.
Yeah, but as long as we tell people we're experts, believe us. But he's been out since March 6th. He's had a pretty lousy spring training. Then again, it's only like 2 games he's played. And
Two games is enough. 2 games is enough to show me that he's going to be awful this year.
After all.
And sarcasm.
After all, Kazume. But Pitsenik.
What?
It was a good. I have no idea. Pitsenik, actually, he's played 3 games, 111 average. But the MRI.
Better than Noguchi.
Yeah, therefore, he's going to be MVP, Pitsenik.
Okay, let's get serious now. The guy has a shoulder injury, and we're making fun of him.
The good news is the MRI was negative. So don't feel too bad about making fun of him. But this is going to be big. I mean, Pitsenik has to be healthy. He's the key player. He's the key cog in the wheels to the White Sox. Kind of think of him as what Ray Durham was to the prior White Sox. The less successful White Sox, but it's still a pretty good White Sox, some pretty good White Sox clubs. And as Durham went, so did the White Sox. And I think last year we saw, as Pitsenik went, so did the White Sox. Obviously, we have a great pitching staff, but if we're going to score runs, we still have power. When Pitsenik gets aboard and he creates wreaks havoc, that is when the White Sox play their best baseball.
Okay, if he's healthy, if his legs and his groin is healthy, okay, if they're all healthy, how many stolen bases can he get in the season? What, he had 59 last year and he was out for a couple, not out, he wasn't out for a couple of months, but he was injured for 2 months.
More than last year. I'm going with the magic number. As one of Sox Talk's magic 8-balls, I'm going with 80.
80? I was going to go with 73.
But if Pitsenik is hurt, Jerry Owens is going to get promoted in a hurry, and he's going to have a lot of pressure on him in a hurry. For those of you who don't know, I think we talked about Owens last week, but Owens is the Scott Pitsenik protege, or the next in line to take over Scott Pitsenik's role. And he's had a really, really good spring. He had a great winter league, great first year in the minors with the White Sox organization last year in Birmingham, led the Southern League in hitting. He's a hitting machine, played football at UCLA, or was on the UCLA football team, don't know how much he played, and then gave up football and went back to baseball. And Owens is a really good athlete, good hitter, good natural hitter, but he's no Scott Pitsenik at this point.
That obviously depends on how Anderson does and if Dye stays healthy, because if Anderson performs well, wouldn't they be better off just going to a bench player and finding another leadoff hitter, whether it's an Noguchi or maybe even Anderson, if he performs offensively, than going to an Owens? Wouldn't they be better off just looking to the bench first?
Possibly. But you got to remember who's our manager. It's Ozzie Guillen. And Rod Mikovia, that's not going to be stealing bases for us. Alex Cintron has like 2 stolen bases in his past couple years, so he's not going to be stealing bases for us. I guess Ozuna could play left field, but I think you'd be better off with Jerry Owens, considering Ozzie's philosophy. He wants speed at the top of the order. And you can't argue with the results. Last year, we won the World Series. So I think if Pitsenik were to go down for an extended time, it's Jerry Owens' job. There's no doubt about that in my mind.
And you may be right. I think if it is an extended time, I think Jerry Owens probably will get the call. If it's probably for a few weeks, they'll probably just do what they did last year, and they'll pop guys like Ozuna out there. You know, they'll bring back Timo Perez and have him play left field.
Hey, the Reds can always drop him. How did he only sign a minor league deal? He's on the World Series champions. He may have been the 25th guy.
You know, he's worthy of a deal similar to Konerka, I will say that.
Exactly. He was the heart and soul of this ball club. He was clutch.
You know what? Okay, hold on. I sounded sarcastic with my last statement. I really didn't have any problems with Timo Perez. I just want to make that clear. I had no problems with Timo Perez. No beefs with him. Just want to make that clear.
The only problem with Timo Perez was the way Ozzie Guillen utilized him. That's why Perez was the hated man, is because Ozzie Guillen was letting him bat DH against the Red Sox with David Ortiz the DH. We did win the game, though. Ozzie made sure to point that out. We won the game with Timo Perez DH.
He made that point at Sox Fest, didn't he?
Yeah, and it was a pretty good one. You know your team's good when your DH, who has like 2 home runs on the season, you still win against the Red Sox, whose 2 big hitters probably had 90 home runs and 300 RBIs.
Yeah.
But we talked about Canerco. We talked about Pasetnik and Dye. I think the real hero of last year's postseason run, Joe Creedy. From the start of last season, probably the most hated player on the White Sox when it came to fans. When is Creedy going to show up? When will he arrive? He's just a bust. Let's go get Eric Chavez. Let's go do this.
He might have been right ahead of Garland.
Yeah, I honestly think so. Although people hated on Garland for entirely different reasons, because Garland was solid in the past. But with Creedy, we all knew he was a stud defensively. And in the playoffs last year,
he
picked it up. He played great defense. Everyone started talking about him and Brooks Robinson. I don't know how the hell they started comparing that, because it was just one playoff. But Joe Creedy, later in the season, shortened his swing. But more importantly, Creedy got comfortable. He got comfortable being one of the stooges with Pierzynski, Creedy, Rowan. And he was hitting for power, and he was carrying us in September, had big hits. And then in the postseason, he was hitting the ball hard, both to left field, and he had good opposite power to right field. And Creedy really matured as a ball player, and I have high expectations on him this season. I think he's a Gold Glove caliber third baseman who can hit 25 home runs, and I think he's going to get to the point where he'll be a 275 hitter.
You know what? I don't want to sound like Mr. Negative, because so far I think the only thing that I'm confident on is Uribe and maybe Pasetnik. But when it comes to Creedy, I think you're right. He had a shorter swing towards the end of the year, but that was only here and there. He still had that long swing for the most part, at least from what I've seen. And I think as long as he has that long swing, which means he's going to be very inconsistent and he's going to have those long stretches where he's on fire, I think that's still a problem that he has to correct. Right? Personally, I think you're going to see the Creedy of old. I think you're going to see the Creedy. He's going to bat 250 again. He's going to hit 25 home runs. Maybe he's going to get 70, 80 RBIs, and he's going to play great defense. Hopefully he actually wins a Gold Glove, because he deserves it sometime in the next few years. But I think offensively you're going to see the same old Creedy.
I would hope we'd see a little better version of Creedy. At the same time, Joe Creedy hitting 250 with 25 home runs.
It works.
His type
it
of
works.
Defense in the 8th spot of a lineup.
I have no problem with it.
Nothing wrong with
it. I just don't think people should be expecting, based on what he did in September and October, that he's going to come in, he's going to break out and bat 290 with, 35 home runs and whatever. And of course, you probably not going to be able to get many RBIs because he's batting low in the lineup. But I wouldn't necessarily expect him to break out this year. I think he's going to have a solid year. He might be a little bit better than last year. And because what he brings to the table on the defensive end, he's going to be a solid ball player. But he's a free agent after this year, right? Or after 2007.
No, I think we got him for 2 more years. It's a widely debated fact. Everyone thinks he's a free agent every year for some reason. But the good news is Josh Fields this spring has opened up Ozzie Guillen's eyes. And
there were some doubts with him, weren't there?
Oh, yeah, there's some big doubts with him. He can't field. Instead of Joe Creedy.
Joe Fields can't field.
Wait, his name's not Joe.
It's Josh, isn't it?
It's Josh. But Fields has a lot of power. He was a quarterback at Oklahoma State. He was our first-round draft pick 2 years ago. And last year in the second half in Birmingham, he started to hit the ball with authority. And this spring, he's creaming the ball. I think he's amongst our league leaders.
Could he be like a replica of Carlos Lee? Remember, Carlos Lee was always a third baseman, and then he was so awful there, they had to move him to left field. Is he bad to the point where they have to move him, or is it just something where he's going to have to he could make adjustments to it?
He's got good feet. The problem is he has horrible footwork. So if he can improve his footwork, and playing third base, a lot of it is your footwork and being in the right position to field the ball.
I think even Creedy had some of those problems early on. I think, that they're long gone, of course, but
and But the key to Fields, if he can hit like he is this spring, 462 average, well, he's going to be all But if he can improve his bat, it is going to put some pressure on Creedy, and it will make the White Sox think in a year or two from now, should we re-sign Creedy? After all, his agent is Scott Boras. But if Creedy plays like I think he's capable of, he has the ability to be one of the four or five best third basemen in the game. Now, I don't know if it'll work out that way, but if he plays like that, I don't think he's going to be leaving the White Sox anytime soon.
Staying with the bottom of the order, A.J. Pruszynski, he'll probably, you know, we talked about it earlier, he'll probably be batting before him, you know, either him or Taguchi. Last year, you know, as great as a season the Sox had, he was probably one guy in the lineup who didn't have a typical year. He had more homers. But outside of having more homers, I think he had a lower average. He struck out a little bit more, really didn't get on base that much. He's probably one guy I think that is going to improve on last year.
I would lean to thinking that, but his average has kind of been on the decline the past couple years. And although we saw his power numbers increase, the A.J. Pruszynski from the Twins 3 years ago was a better baseball player. And I think part of it is A.J.'s gotten a little pull happy. Maybe it's Greg Walker's scheme. Walker seems to like the pull hitters, or seems to lend his hitter.
Yes.
And prefer him to pull the ball. But at the same time, Pruszynski has gotten bigger each and every year. And I think he needs to work a little bit more on his off-season conditioning.
Well, you know, when you're with the Twins, most guys on the Twins, they're not really built up too big. They're basically, you know, they're an average-sized contact hitters. That's kind of what they push in the Twins organization. So maybe when he left, he wanted to be a little more powerful, but especially coming to you know, the Sox, where it's known as a smaller ballpark, and maybe he got a little pool happy because of that reason.
The nice thing about Pruszynski, though, last year he didn't get on any of his typical hot streaks. I think he had one point where he had like three or four home runs in a row or something, or close to that, like a couple games.
Yeah.
But aside from that, he didn't have any hot streak. I think he's a hot streak away from being a 270 hitter with the Sox next year. So I would agree with you that he'll have a better season, although he looks awfully big in spring training. I mean, he's a big guy, but he looks
a little
bigger.
You think he put on more weight now, I mean, as far as the muscle goes?
I think there was a lot of celebrating going on during the offseason. I don't think it was muscle. But the nice thing about Pruszynski, whatever we get out of him is a plus offensively. Even though he has a poor arm when it comes to throwing out runners, the guy is the general of that pitching staff. He calls a great game. He has a great attitude. Mm-hmm. And he was that guy who kind of, I think, got the team to mesh last year, along with Ozzie.
Yeah.
He kind of came in and said, forget about the Twins. Worry about yourself. Because the past couple off seasons, all we heard was how we're supposed to beat the Twins.
Yeah.
He had Burley running off comments. He had everyone on the team talking about how much better we were than the Twins. Instead of just talking about the White Sox, doing our thing, as long as you focus on your team,
and
play
good
baseball and win.
And that's the type of character Pruszynski is. He just doesn't give a shit about anybody else. And
that's why we
that's
love
the
him.
Attitude they took last year, and that's good. And I think he's going to bring that attitude this year. I think his game calling last year was fine. I think maybe outside of McCarthy, who he seemed to have some issues with, I think he called a good game last year.
Yeah, he was excellent at that, and that was obviously his knock in San Francisco. But all you got to do as Sox fans is look back to when he was with Minnesota.
No problem.
And how much Sox fans hated A.J. Pruszynski. Whenever you hate a player that much, he's doing something right. And then we have my favorite player, Brian Anderson. He's a top prospect, first-round pick, you know, 3 years ago, produced in the minor leagues. The White Sox are going to ask him to replace one of the best defensive center fielders in the game, definitely one of the three best in mine, and that would be Aaron Rowan they're asking him to replace. Anderson has the tools defensively. He has the tools offensively. Realistically, I think they're going to be similar players in their careers. The one problem I have with Anderson is his swing is downright ugly. Last year, when he came up to the major leagues, he was pathetic, aside from his game against Felix Hernandez where he had two home runs. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of concerns about Brian Anderson. Obviously, he's going to be in the ninth hole, and if we don't make the playoffs, it's not going to be Anderson's fault. At the same time, Anderson's got to be able to pretty up his swing or start recognizing pitches better because he gets fooled on breaking balls. He looks ridiculous at the plate.
You know, I think defensively, comparing to Rowan, I think he's similar. You know, when Rowan came up, he wasn't a typical center fielder, but he put in the time, he put in the effort, and he became one. I think the same thing's going to happen with Anderson, where he's not going to be a great center fielder, but he's going to work himself into it. Offensively, I think it's going to be an all-or-nothing situation. I think you might see a player who's going to either put up better numbers than Rowan and be a better offensive player than Rowan, or you're going to see a guy who, like last year, like you said, he has that ugly swing, and that could make him into a 200 hitter, which means that they might be looking for somebody else. So I think it's going to be a hit or miss offensively. Defensively, I think he'll be fine.
I think we're going to know within the year whether Brian Anderson is the real deal. If he isn't, I know Jerry Owens, we mentioned his name. I think the White Sox are going to give him substantial playing time in center field this year. I've long said he can't play center, but the White Sox are going to try to widen the options up, because if Brian Anderson isn't successful, they're going to have to throw someone else in there. When you're playing for the World Series, you can't afford to have a guy just totally stink a whole season.
Mm-hmm. And a guy like Mikoviak, and I like him, I think he's a great bench player, but whenever you say somebody's a great bench player, there's always doubt as whether he could be an actual starter.
I think if Brian Anderson hit 200, which I actually think is a decent possibility, then Mikoviak is obviously the first guy they look to. But another guy, and I know this isn't thrown out and it's probably not liked, Ryan Sweeney, who was one of the most hyped guys in our minor league system about 2 years ago.
That spring training he had. That spring training he had, I saw him. I remember we were actually down there. His swing was beautiful. I don't like using that word either. He had a really nice swing going. And then I believe I seen him the year after, and it's like his swing was completely different. But then now you see him again, and it looks like he's back to his old self, and he's tearing
figured
it up.
He's completely healthy. Last year, he only hit, I think, one home run or two home runs. He's hit more this spring than he hit all last year. And with this guy's swing, if he's healthy, there's no way he's not going to hit in the major leagues. He's smart.
And if he's
he
not going to bring
strong
the power,
arm.
If he's not going to bring the power, he has to be a center fielder, wouldn't you think?
I don't know how well he'll play defensively in center, but I do know he's a very good athlete. And again, why not give yourself a little more options and try getting him a few innings out there this spring in center field and just see how he handles it. But as far as his power goes, I realize he only hit one or two home runs last year. It's not going to be an issue. As he learns to pull the ball, and now that his wrist is healthy, he will see his home run totals climb, and he'll be a 20 home run guy in the major leagues.
Now,
that is the player you should be excited for if you're White Sox fans. And he will be the guy that replaces Jermaine Dye if everything works out as planned.
Well, I mean, you don't want to have a situation where both Pitsenik and Dye are being replaced. I think ideally you'd like to keep one of them past next year. Well, Dye has an option for 2007, right?
Yeah, I think it's $6.5 million or $7.5 million.
So ideally, I think you'd like to keep one of those guys for 2007. You don't want to bring up two young guys, you know, in the same season, I don't think.
Well, I'm completely with you. I think this is Brian Anderson's year in center field. If Brian Anderson struggles, the White Sox will look somewhere in free agency to find themselves a center fielder, because I don't think Jerry Owens or Ryan Sweeney are long-term plans in center field. Then you have Jermaine Dye out there in right field for one more year, because I think as long as he stays healthy, you're going to keep him. The question is Pitsenik. If Brian Anderson has a really good year this year and you have Jermaine Dye in right field, then I think you may see Pitsenik gone, with Jerry Owens or Ryan Sweeney replacing him. However,
I think it all depends what you can sign Pitsenik for. I think if he puts in another year like he did last year, and he's only 29, 30 years old, if you could give him a 3-4 year deal and sign him to a reasonable contract, I think you got to stick with him.
What do you consider reasonable? I mean, Johnny Damon got, I think, Canerco money, and Damon has been producing for a lot longer than Scott Pitsenik has. But in terms of their roles, when you want a leadoff hitter with speed, I think it's going to be something that is overpaid for now, thanks to the White Sox winning the World Series. So I think Pitsenik, if he has a repeats last year, is going to get $8 or $9 million a year. I don't think the White Sox are going to spend that.
Well, I mean, it all depends. He might be able to get it, but it all depends if he's going to be asking for it. Now, we were talking about Ryan Sweeney and Jerry Owens. They really don't have a chance to make it on the bench. Joe Borchardt and Ross Gloed are fighting for that final bench spot. Borchardt has been pretty bad, though, in spring training, hasn't he?
Let me pull this up here. The nice thing about Borchardt, though, is he can play all three outfield positions, and he can play them well.
Yeah.
His spring, you're right, he's hitting 176. Let me see what Gloed's doing. Gloed's hitting 333, so there's definitely a difference there.
Is he always hitting 333?
One thing Gloed can do is, when he's healthy, the man can hit. He has a pretty swing. The problem is, he doesn't have the power for the position he plays, which is first base, and he's not strong enough defensively to be very good in the outfield, which is why I think Borchardt has to be the favorite. Borchardt can play center field, right field, left field. You don't get that out of Ross Gloed. And when we already have as many infielders as we do, when Ozuna, Cintron, and Mikoviak, we don't have that guy that can play center field well. I realize Mikoviak can play center field, but Borchardt can play that position well, and he would provide us some right-handed pop as he's a switch hitter. And all our other bats off the bench are pretty much left-handed, with the exception of Widger and Cintron, who can also switch hit.
I do agree with you. I mean, really, outside of Anderson, then you're going to leave yourself in a situation where Mikoviak or Pitsenik are going to be the backup center fielder. And we all know Pitsenik cannot play center field. And Mikoviak, while he probably do a decent job, he's not a typical center fielder. So I kind of get what you're saying there. But when you're just talking about from the offensive standpoint, a guy like Ross Gloed, he is just such a good hitter. He could probably play the corner outfielder, and I think if you give him a chance and he has some time to actually adjust to the position, I think he'll be decent out there, and I think what he brings, you know, to first base is good.
When you talk offense, there's no comparison. Gloed is ultimately better. Remember, Gloed has played center field. I think he played it against Cleveland like a year ago. Not this past season, but the following season. But I just don't see it. I think Ozzie's going to want defense.
Now
so
they're both out of options, right?
Yeah, so one of them's going to be gone. And
who do you think would be the easier? They would have to pop him on waivers, or it would be an automatic release?
They if he got through waivers, you could take him off and send him down to AAA.
Okay, now who do you think would be easier to keep?
I don't think either of them would stay. I think if they're sent down, Borchardt's already talked about going back to football, or trying to see if he can get a major league job somewhere. I don't think he's going to play in the minor leagues anymore. And then in Gloed's case, I think it's the same thing. He can find a major league job somewhere. When you hit the way he can, someone's going to give him a chance. And he knows, with Jim Thome and Canerico ahead of him, he's not going to get that opportunity in Chicago.
You know, the thing is, and I've said this, you know, time and time again, he started off in Colorado. I believe he started off with the Cubs. He was behind Mark Grace. In Colorado, he was behind Todd Helton. The Sox, he's behind Paul Konerko. He really hasn't been in an organization that needs a first baseman. So I hope he does get a chance. I was just curious if there was a possibility you could bring one up and still keep the other in the organization. But, you know, as you said, if Borchardt, if he's, you know, deciding to go back to football, if he doesn't make the team, and Gloed, obviously, I think he's kind of upset with the organization. I think he feels that he hasn't really given a fair chance, and I think if he doesn't make the team, he's going to be gone too. So there goes my plan.
But then we have our real assets on this bench are Mikoviak. Although, after getting Cintron, if I could go back in time and knowing that we could acquire Alex Cintron, I would not have acquired Rob Mikoviak, because I think having a guy like Damaso Marte, as many faults as he had, would have been the better player to have. But we have Mikoviak. He's a quality hitter. He's a real streaky hitter, and when he's on, he's lethal. And he's going to be valuable. He can play pretty much any position on the field aside from catcher. And he's going to be getting a lot of playing time, especially with the way Ozzie manages. And although I think Cintron should be the first off the bench, I think Mikoviak's going to be the one getting most of the playing time in that utility role.
Well, the thing is with Mikoviak, and you brought this up earlier, he was brought in as a backup to Creedy. If Creedy has any back problems, you can't really bring up Fields because his defense is obviously horrendous right now. Cintron isn't necessarily a good defensive player. He's just decent enough. Ozuna could play third. I mean, a guy like Mikoviak, though, I think he could be a guy where if Creedy gets hurt, you could put him in third base for an extended period of time, and he'll do a fine job with it. So I think that's kind of the reason why Mikoviak was a good deal, and I would have made both trades. I don't mind having that extra depth on the bench. And Marte, I like Marte. I think he was a fine reliever, but I think they were better off trading him, getting Mikoviak, and then finding a lefty reliever in the free agent market or making another trade for one. Because obviously that, you know, Marte and Guillen had some problems.
You're right. We could maybe find a left-handed reliever in free agency, but that's not really viable. Look at the left-handers we picked up. Reynoso, who's our in-house candidate, is the one that's doing the best, but he's never consistently thrown strikes. Lopez, who's Ozzy's front-runner right now, just got shellacked. Maybe not his last outing, but the one before it. He gave up like 4 or 5 runs, and he has like a career ERA of 9 or 10 in the major leagues over 3 seasons. So those options aren't viable. Damaso Marte may have been hated, but he was a whole lot better off than whatever we're going to have to replace Hermanson if his back's gone, and whoever's replacing Damaso Marte. So that is a bigger issue to me than having 2 potential third base guys like Mikoviak and Cintron. But like I said, we don't have the credit of a time machine, and I'm not going to pull in Napoleon Dynamite and try that time machine. But now I want to talk about one of my favorite guys, Pablo Ozuna.
Ozuna? Wait, huh?
Ozuna. I had to do my impression of you botching a name because you haven't botched one all show. So Pablo Ozuna, he's going to get substantially less playing time, and he was one of Ozzy's favorite guys off the bench this year. But with Mikoviak and Cintron, those two are going to get most of the at-bats. And I think Ozuna is going to take more of a pinch runner and occasionally where he pinch hits to bunt type of role.
Especially with Harris gone. I think Ozuna, you're going to see him pinch running more, especially for guys like Canerico and Tomy and Brzezinski. You're going to see him pinch running more later in the game. That's going to be his role. And I think you might even see him play a little more outfield. I think, you know, when Pacetic's going to get a day off, you might see Ozuna play a little left field.
I'd agree. When Pacetic's the one getting the day off, it'll be Ozuna because Ozuna can slide into that leadoff role.
Yeah.
And Mikoviak can't. And Ozzy doesn't like – one thing Ozzy doesn't like to do, when he gives guys off, he keeps them right where they were in the lineup because he doesn't jumble everyone around.
The final spot is with Chris Widger. Not really much to talk about. I mean, he's just your typical backup. He's not going to hurt you. He's not really going to help you too much. He's going to go out there, call a decent game, and give decent at-bats.
That's about Widge. He's a gutsy. I mean, he calls a good game. He came up somehow. He had some solid at-bats with the team, had some big hits with the team, and he's got a good attitude. You can't knock what the guy's doing.
All right, well, we're approaching an hour here, so let's kind of wrap this up. You see Borchard making a team, right? So you see the bench being Borchard, Ozuna, Widger, Mikoviak, and Cintron.
Actually, I'm throwing something else out there.
Mm-mm.
I think there's a possibility neither Glode or Borch make the team, and instead they go with a third catcher. Because I think that creates for a little bit more value than, say, having a guy like Glode who can play first base, giving you 3 first basemen. But I'm the only one that says that. Yeah, I like Stewart. That guy's a stud defensively. Can't hit. But neither can Borch.
You know what? I haven't seen many spring training games on TV, but a few games I did see, he was behind the plate and he was catching Charles Hager, and he had some fun back there.
Yeah, the knuckleballers ain't easy to catch. But that's going to wrap up our second show. Hopefully you guys liked it. I know we got a little long in parts. It was even longer than our last show. It's meant to be about 40 minutes. Once again, if you have any feedback for us, email me, because Meyer, he just doesn't give a damn. He thinks he's amazing no matter what.
No.
But email me at jason@futurebears.com. And remember, check out Sox Talk and then our new sites, talkbears.com and talkbulls.com. And if for some forsaken reason...
Big time.
If for some crazy reason you want to listen to more Mario, make sure you check out 360thepitch.com and listen to the Mario and Jeff show. They have a podcast available, and it is way more entertaining than listening to us two stooges talk.
Speaking of podcasts, I'm going to next week this will be available as a podcast. The reason I want to do it is I kind of want to build the suspense for the Sox Talk readers, you know? I kind of want to get them, like, waiting and begging for it.
Man... That makes me just feel like more of a dork today. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you possibly next week live from spring training or the following week when we highlight and kind of preview the season up ahead.